Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel. I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Today on The Grave Talks, Paranormal Investigation, conversation with Dylan Lane. The world of the paranormal is filled with investigators. Their passion for the paranormal is often sparked in very different ways and leads each one on unique paths. Today, we hear the story of Dylan Lane, his drive to better understand the dead, and where his journey has taken him. On The Grave Talks.
Well, for me, it's kind of different than most stories. Most people, you know, grew up in a haunted house and stuff, but that's not it for me. For me, it was growing up, I was actually quite terrified of this kind of stuff. Whenever I hated horror movies, you know, every single time my family put a horror movie on, I'd go run up in the other room. But it wasn't until I was in right around sixth grade, my school took a trip to a local fort that was used by the Buffalo Soldiers here during the Western Expansion. And the story is that inside Officers Quarters 1, Commander Grierson's daughter, Edith, died of typhoid fever right after her 13th birthday. It was right after or right before, but it was right around her 13th birthday she died of typhoid fever, and she's known to, you know, occupy the OQ-1 and throughout the rest of the locations on the floor. And we're all standing outside. I'm with the rest of my class, and I look up in the window and I see like this girl roughly about my age at the time staring back at us, just looking at us. And it was the upstairs section. I thought I was another student, but we weren't allowed to go in the upstairs section because it was all roped off. She's looking at us through the upstairs window, and I'm like, I look at the teacher and I ask the curators at the fort, you know, I think there's a student up there. They just kind of like, the teacher thought so too, and she went to talk to them as well, and they were like, just brush it off. It's not a student. It's a, they called it another resident of the fort. And that right there is pretty much my first experience. I saw a full-bodied apparition.
So you have this experience at the fort. You see this full-bodied apparition. Do you, I know you'd mentioned it, you know, while you're in the, with your class and such, does anyone else see it? Does anyone else experience it? Or does everybody kind of look at you like, oh yeah, I'm sure you saw that.
Not everybody else is just kind of mingling amongst themselves. I was the one that saw it, and I told my teacher about it, like I said, because we, you know, I just assumed, and she just assumed that it was a student that maybe I got cut off from the rest of the, one of the classes that were there, and went up there, and the curators at the fort were just like, no, don't worry about it. There's, we'll take a look, but there's not going to be a student up there. And they kind of brush it off a little bit. It says most likely it's one of the residents of the fort.
Sure. So they knew it. They've experienced it. It wasn't anything new for them. I know you took some time there.
Oh, yeah,
and as you continued to develop your interest in all this, did you have any other experiences in childhood before kind of jumping deeper into this as you got older?
Not really, no. Like that was what sparked my interest. And throughout the next 6 years, it was just like, not so much experiences, but just a lot of research and, you know, like I said, watching the shows that drove my curiosity deeper and deeper and deeper into making me want to actually, like pick up a camera and digital recorder and a K2 meter and just lunge into it. And I've been hooked ever since.
Really try and find more out. So tell me how that evolution went. You started picking up a camera and a tape recorder and wanted to start seeing, what else was out there. How many things can you capture and things of that nature? Tell me how that went. How did that journey begin where you actually started to find some things as you dug?
Right. It started out with me and my buddies. We were all in high school and it was after one of the episodes of Ghost Adventures, and we're just kind of like, let's get this a try. So we went, back then, they're not going to, locations aren't going to let, high school students run around their place and stuff to look for ghosts, because most places around here are kind of like, what?
Sure.
So we kind of just, did our own thing, went out to cemeteries and stuff at night just to see how it worked. One of my buddy's houses, we captured some insanely incredible EVPs there with that tape recorder. And we're like, let's try to do something more with this. So once we all graduated high school and we all turned 18, that's when we really started to actually try to find locations that we can rent out and investigate for real.
So you captured the EVPs. What did you hear on those and where were you?
We were inside his house, my buddy's house that was part of he was a member of the team, I guess you can say, that we had at the time. And we were just digging in his closet. We had the tape recorder going, and we found some notes that were written by a girl at the school. And we said her name and whatever. We captured the EVP right there. It said, yeah, that was her name. And there's been several others. And when we're just having a conversation, all of a sudden there'll be an extra voice there that says, I'm going to F you up and stuff.
What is the story on the girl and the notes and why this EVP or why this voice is coming through in connection with her?
Well, she had been to the house several times, and we don't really know the story behind it. We just know that it was a girl in our school. She used to write notes to everybody, I guess, so it was just her thing to do. And we found a bunch of them in my buddy's closet, and it just happened to say, yeah, that was her name. Whether it's actually referring to her herself or another person by that name that the spirit may have known.
Do you know who this girl was?
Yeah, I knew who the girl in the school that was writing the notes were. Mm-hmm. But as far as like made the reference from the spirit, no.
Yeah.
If it's her herself or somebody else.
Is she dead?
The same name possibly. No, she's alive.
Okay.
She used to come to the house with us a lot.
So just interesting that the spirit recognized her. So you have this almost threatening voice saying, I'm going to fuck you up. How do you all handle that when the dead are telling you and directly threatening you?
It's weird for us because, we've always been, trying to, a lot of people out there would try to turn away from that, but for us it was more like intriguing. Like when stuff like that happens, I'm all about, I want to capture the evidence no matter what kind of evidence it is, so long as it's not physically, like, once things get actually physical, that's when I kind of back off. But I don't like turn around and antagonize it. But it was more intriguing for us, and we just kind of like brushed it off and try to figure out exactly what was going on and who that was, because that was a totally different voice from the other one. we captured probably about four or five different voices from that house.
What was the thought process going in and taking EVPs at his house? Did he have things that were going on and they were curious to see what was happening? Or was it more just, let's see if we can get EVPs here?
Well, at first, before we even started doing this, we used to go, just hang out at his house overnight and stuff a lot. And we just random things would happen. Like one time we're just chilling in his room, playing on the Xbox, and all of a sudden his door would just unclick and open, and we're thinking like, okay, is your mom about to walk in or something? And it's just like, and he's like, hello, who's out there? And we go out, his room was connected to the kitchen, and there's nobody outside, everybody's asleep. And another time before that, I was out of town at my grandparents' house, but I was on the phone with my buddies that were at the house, and all of a sudden, the guy I was on the phone with, Anthony, he starts having a full-on panic attack on the phone, like hyperventilating and stuff, because he says he saw a woman's face over Josh's right shoulder, like a glowing woman's face. And that right there is what really made us want to be like, okay, let's just, every time we're over there, when we're not doing anything, we're just chilling, we'll just turn the tape recorder on to start recording and see what we pick up. Or just, we'll just have a conversation. We won't actively try to communicate, because for some reason, when it came to that house, when we tried to communicate or try to document the evidence, nothing would happen. It was only whenever we're just nonchalant, just hanging out, and we just had like a recorder sitting on the desk recording, is when we'd capture it.
More on their terms than yours.
Yeah,
in that
exactly.
Specific house. Wow. I mean, so that would but be it, very, but, that would definitely be very intriguing.
Right. And it was always like intelligent, because a lot of times they would say things that were pertaining to the conversation. Like, like earlier, whenever I was talking about how we found the letters from the girl and that he had in the closet, and it was there, the EVP was pertaining to that particular person. Mm-hmm. It's a very intelligent connecting with the conversation.
Yeah. The fact that it was connecting with what you guys were saying. And making its own commentary, if you will. So how did things progress from your capturing EVPs at your friend's haunted house to getting out and doing more investigating? What was your thought process there? What were your goals with going out and trying to investigate beyond, you know, just your circle of friends?
That started whenever we met. I had a buddy that reached out to me on Facebook. We had the team Contra Valley Paranormal. We had our own page and stuff, because we wanted to make a YouTube channel. We wanted to start the whole production side of things and actually film our investigations. And so we needed locations. And so I started reaching out to other more experienced teams at the time, more older people. And we go out there and do stuff with him. And so he brought us to our very first location, which was like an old hotel turned into a museum, and we captured some stuff there. We went to an old dorm house and captured some amazing stuff there, and that right there really wanted me to give out there and start documenting evidence at larger commercialized locations, such as hospitals, hotels, museums, things of that nature.
So where were some of the first places that you then decided to visit based on that?
That first location, like I said, it was that hotel. I can't remember exactly what it was called. It was in the town of Rankin, which is just a small little high-by town not too far from me. Then right after that, the very second location we went to was Sawroff State University in Alpine, Texas. And we did it one of the old dorm houses there at Mountainside. And I had a SB7 spirit box going, and we captured, it was a deep rental voice saying, fuck you, that came through. And it was, that right there really wanted me to make me go out and do, like I said, the more commercialized side of things. Cause that night after that, we were only in that building for 30 minutes and we captured that. After that, everybody else that was in the group wanted to get up and leave. Anthony and I and a couple of other people that were with us, we wanted to stay, but the curator had to go with the guy who wanted to leave, so we all had to get out of the building. But the rest of us were able to stay in the other dorm house that we were investigating, and we stayed and slept there, and the people that were with us had a recorder going while we slept and captured probably the most intelligent, hair-raising EVP I've ever heard in my life, and it lasted for like a whole minute and a half. It's like three voices yelling and screaming at each other.
What was it? Was the yelling and screaming pertaining?
It blew my mind.
Was it pertaining to things that you guys were talking about, or was it almost like you're almost getting a glimpse into the other side and how they're interacting one on one?
It was more like them interacting, because they were. It sounded like, at first, it sounded like a woman saying, "Don't make me laugh," and then it sounded like two other male voices screaming, you know, "Fuck Beverly" and stuff like that, which is crazy because Beverly is the female spirit's name there, who was either, we don't know the story yet, but it was either suicide or murder that occurred in that dorm house back in the 70s. Her name was Beverly. So, and we were asleep when this happened. And it literally just sounds like three people yelling and screaming at each other.
And it just picked it up by itself. Wow.
It lasted for like a whole minute and a half.
and I'd like to hear more about that, but let's go back to the hotel, one of the first ones that you investigated. Tell me that story. What was it like going in for the first time, and what happened?
Yeah, that place, it really didn't intrigue me too much, because not so much happened there. It was kind of, you know, like one of those places, you know, where it really, that right there showed me in the paranormal that it's not all, you know, in your face all the time. There's going to be moments where nothing's going to happen. And sure. that was it right there. But like some little things happened here, some knocks. One thing, one of the doors opened and shut on its own, and that was about it. I went back and looked at the footage. It was more like personal experiences for other people than for me.
Okay. So the university that what you went to, what was the, was that basically the story of the woman that had died in the 70s, suicide or murder? We don't really know.
That's what drove us to there. That's how we knew, because the people that we went with had already been there before and they got documented some stuff. So they invited us out for their second trip, and we decided to, you know, start our investigation based on that story. And we weren't really picking anything up at that point, except to, like, you know, very emotional stuff. One of the ladies that was with us, she started crying because she was able to pick up on, I guess it was Beverly. And then the other dorm house, which has been shut down, the mountainside one, which is where we captured that voice on the spirit box, we don't really know about all that, that whole story. But the one in the main place that we went to, that was the whole story behind it. That's where we based our investigation off of, was, you know, the story of Beverly in the 70s, and we wanted to find out more. But from what we captured there, I have a feeling that it wasn't so much it's suicide as it was a maybe foul play.
Just by the energy and the what you had heard that you picked up on.
Yeah.
What's your goal when you went into a place like that? Is it just to capture evidence and to, you know, get some thrills out of it and say, look at this, we found something that pertains to kind of connect the story together? Or what exactly do you have in mind when you go in?
Yeah, our goals when we are going to locations is to document the evidence of, you know, the paranormal activity that's occurring there, but also to try to either prove or disprove the occurrences that other people have had, or the, you know, the historical stories that people tell. Because, you know, over time, and this pertains to all events throughout history, over time, there's going to be a lot of embellishment.
Sure.
You know, things are going to change. Stories are going to change. So I try to use this as a way to maybe see if this story is true or that story is true. Because for every location I've been to, I've heard over a dozen different things pertaining to one event.
Yeah, over time, people are going to end up, you know, adding a little more spice to it as it goes along. And then the reality of what occurred may be far from what the story is at that point in time. Give me an example of something like that where you've heard stories, and as you've done research and you went in and took a look at it, you discovered maybe the stories were not so accurate as to what reality is.
Well, there's this one location that we've been to, and where they said it was a murder-suicide thing, mm-hmm. and just the activity that occurred there just kind of made me feel like, okay, maybe it was that, but not in the sense of, you know, the emotional, like they try to make it extremely dramatic. You know, they told us it was, you know, this, and there's, you know, hair on the walls and blood on the walls and stuff. We've had, you know, forensics experts. It's an unsolved case. I'm sitting here thinking, like, if it's an unsolved case, aren't you even supposed to be talking about it? You know what I'm saying? Like, and then you say you had forensics experts to come and do all these tests and stuff. And I'm sitting here thinking, like that's, I thought all that kind of stuff was supposed to be like confidential. It's not supposed to be commercialized. And so that's why I'm sitting here thinking to myself, like, okay, maybe this did happen, but the whole after story of it is not exactly how, it's hard to explain.
How far back in time did they say the crimes occurred?
I'd say anywhere else, probably like during the 30s, I believe. Because the place used to be a speakeasy, mm-hmm. in the 20s, 30s, during a speakeasy during the Prohibition, Great Depression era. So there's no, with stuff like that, there's no telling what could have happened.
Well, and there's, you know, no forensic, there's no forensic experts that ever is going to go in and come to any conclusion for something that occurred in the 1930s.
Exactly. I mean, I understand that under the right conditions, bloodstains and stuff can remain visible for decades, but I don't think that stuff is going to, you know, be sitting on the wall like that forever, especially hair particles.
No. I mean, I think sometimes people will embellish to make the situation sound scarier than it actually is. Give me some examples of some of the cases that you've investigated that stand out to you the most.
I mean, I love this location to death, and the people there are just absolutely, the people who own it is absolutely amazing. It's the Old Park Hotel in Ballinger, Texas. It's probably the best location I've ever been to. I've investigated it well over 17 times. And it's not just because it's only 30 minutes from me. It's because it's just that location. It's one of those, I have this theory where every investigator is going to find their home front, mm-hmm. which is, you know, the location that's going to stick to them the most. Every investigator is going to find that one place. May happen today, may happen tomorrow, 10 years from now, but it's going to happen. And this location is definitely that for me.
What's the history? What's the story of this hotel?
Oh, it's been well over a dozen different things, but it was built back in 1886, we believe. That's how far back the records go, but it may be even older than that. But the Ballinger City records show it to have been from 1886 to now. But anyway. It started out as just a family home, and then it became broader into a hotel. It was a bordello twice, a schoolhouse. And basically there's documented well over 30 spirits there from each era of this location. It's mind blowing, this place.
So you said it's been many things, a hotel obviously being one of them. What else has it been that's stood out? I mean, obviously the idea of a bordello and things of that nature.
Yeah, it's been that twice. It's been a schoolhouse. It's been a, like I said, just a standard family home. I think it was used as partially for a courthouse, I think, maybe at one point.
Okay.
Before the actual one was built. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's seen a lot of people and places and people coming and going. What was it like the first time you went in there? What happened the first time you went in there as well?
Well, the people who own it, Dan and Connie Lefebvre, they were already friends of mine beforehand, and they bought this location in July of 2016. I was the first person to ever conduct a paranormal investigation there. They invited me in August me and my team to conduct the very first investigation there. And the first time we were there, we actually captured this. It's like, not really in the sense of an apparition, but like silhouette of light energy. It was in the shape of a person, but it was like more light than anything. You know those plasma balls, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you put your hand on it, it has those little electric rods that sure. follow your finger.
Yeah.
I use those as a way of providing electromagnetic energy, and it works. If you take a K2 meter and go about 5 feet from it, it's gonna show that there's a lot of energy emanating from it. So okay. I use those in a sense to provide like my own EM pump, I guess you could call it.
Okay.
And so we had it set up in the corner. We had our DVR camera facing it. And Dan, at the end of the investigation, Dan, the owner, he walks down there and unplugs it. And as he walks away, the headlamp that he had, the natural light headlamp, refracted off of our lights. And with DVR cameras, when it encounters a heavy amount of regular light, the infrared lights shut off for a second. And then they come back on. So when they shut off, right where the plasma ball was, you can see this like silhouette of this, like, it looks like maybe a kid size appear. And it's like, it looks like old TV times, old TV static. You know, how it looked, mm-hmm. that old static look, yeah. looks just like that. And it lasts until the infrared lights come back on and then it's gone. So for that split second that those infrared lights came off, that thing just appeared. And it's just like visiting there. It looks like it's like it was touching the plasma ball and emanating that last minute bit of energy from it to manifest in that kind of way, and then disappeared.
That's an interesting thing. I've never heard of anyone using the plasma balls for something like that, but it makes a lot of sense that could be something to basically put a battery there and give some energy. When you saw yeah. that little, what looked like a child figure in that setting, how did that progress? Did you see any more of this? Did you learn any more about any children that were there at one time?
Well, that's when Dan and Connie, they just bought the location, so they were just starting their research of it. And then we go back the next time, and that's when they tell us, like, there's a little boy spirit there by the name of Benjamin and two little girls. We really don't know their names yet. I think we know now, but then we didn't. I have to ask them. But yeah, this little boy spirit, Benjamin, I believe that was him because I've seen him twice in the full body apparition since then. One time I was doing a little isolation project in one of the upstairs bedrooms that is known for, it's like a hotbed of activity. And I'm doing this isolation project. I'm all alone up there. Dan and Anthony, they're downstairs in the loft area. And I look over out the door, and that's when I see him. It's literally the exact same size as what was on the plasma ball. So I have a feeling that when I saw that, the spirit of Benjamin knew that I saw that, and then he clicked with me. And that's how I believe I've seen him there twice since then. That isolation session, and then one other time running up the stairs. I think that was last year when that happened.
When you...
With the plasma ball, I think 2016.
Yeah, when you're drawn into a place like this, obviously it has a lot of activity. Why do you think it speaks to you so much? Why is that, you know, like your location that you seem to be most connected to?
I have a feeling because I was the first one to ever give them the opportunity to communicate with us. I'm the one who came in there and try to actually reach out to the spirits to give them that voice to the world. I think that's part of it. Because before that, the previous owner, before Dan, never allowed anything like that to happen. She knew it was haunted because it's been in her family for generations. But no one's ever done an investigation there before until Dan bought it, and then he invited me out there to actually conduct the investigation. So I think that's probably why. Because the spirits know me the most, because I've been there the most. Even though I've investigated it, like I said, 17 plus times, but I've been in there well over 100 times, you know, helping Dan do stuff. We've just encountered things. I go up the stairs and I'll be like, hey, how's it going, everybody? And I'll hear like footsteps and stuff, whatnot. And then I'd hear like little pitter patter of feet. And I'd be like, hey, what's going on, Benjamin? You know, I believe that that's part of it. Like, that's why the location reaches out to me the most, is because I gave them that voice first.
Do you think that the spirits there, obviously you said there's quite a few, are they all happy to be there? Are they in a kind of, this is their place, they're good?
Over time, this one particular spirit, and we believe we already know who it is. We believe that over time, there's been bits of aggression that's come from this. There was one time I was doing an isolation session. I was there filming a 5-part docuseries called A Haunting in Ballinger, and this can be found on my YouTube channel, this is part 2 isolation. I'm downstairs. There's a room. All the way back to the left is room 116. It's a room where really doesn't like women. The spirit women there in that room. It's like a maintenance room. There's a bunch of like old tools, saw blades, things of that nature. And it's like the maintenance area. So the spirit there is very territorial. And so I go in there and I'm not being like aggressive. I'm just kind of being like assertive. You know, like, hey, what's going on? Why are you aggressive? Let's have a conversation. Tell me your story type of thing, but trying to put it out there where I'm not being a dick, but also trying to get to the bottom of it. And so I'm hearing, you know, footsteps out there. And so I go up to the doorway and I look, and I have my camera. I'm holding my camera at chest level. And I look down the hallway where I'm hearing all this scuffling. And I say, and you hear me say, I'm hearing stuff out here. And right as I'm saying that, I start hearing like, you know, like when you take your finger and you tap glass, like a light bulb, you hear that ting, ting, ting sound.
Yeah.
I hear that, but for some reason, my instinct and my habit tells me to, instead of turning my body with my camera to look into the room where that sound is coming, I only turn my head and I see a light bulb lift up about 16 inches off the shelf and shoot straight at the opposite side of the room or that wall and shatter against that wall. That was the very first bit of paranormal, of poltergeist activity I've ever seen with my own eyes. And so that right there is that first bit of aggression that I've occurred there. And ever since then, there has just been constantly growing and growing and growing. And we believe that the spirit that's doing this, is his name is Jim Miller, and his nickname is the Deacon. He was a notorious outlaw that ran in this area all the way up from like West Texas all the way up to Kansas. And I believe, but the weird thing is, I believe that he was killed in Kansas, I think is where it was. He was found and he was hung inside of a barn with 2 other guys. But we believe he haunts the Old Park Hotel because we believe he's linked to the bordello there, and that he frequented it quite a bit back in the day. And so I think that that's like, you know, when, even though, you know, when spirits die, I don't think that they actually haunt where they die. I think they haunt where they're located, where they were most, where their energy is most linked to, I believe. And that right there really kind of, I guess you could say, proved my theory of that to me, at least. I don't know if I could prove that to the rest of the community, but it definitely shows it to me that that can happen.
That wraps up part 1 of our conversation. In part 2, how have the spirits of the Old Park Hotel raise their level of aggression against investigators? Do the spirits of the Old Park Hotel interact with one another? And could investigating a haunted location make it even more haunted than it was originally? Those questions and more as we continue our talk with Dylan Lane. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. You can do it through Apple Podcasts or patreon.com/thegravetalks, or visit thegravetalks.com. and click Become a Gravekeeper. You'll get access to all of our interviews in their entirety, hundreds of them, ready for you to binge away, all commercial free. TheGraveTalks.com, or subscribe directly through Apple Podcasts. Until next time, for all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel. Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N, Rakuten.com.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.